When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, ESPN and Major League Baseball do not appear as if they're going to continue to be in business together, but in this industry, bridges do not stay burned for long, and we'll talk about that and much more on the newest edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Let's get started with the news of the week. Even though this is nearly a week ago, we're taping Wednesday that this happened. Major League Baseball announcing last week that it has mutually agreed to end its relationship with ESPN. That has been disputed. ESPN did opt out. Major League Baseball could have opted out as well, but this was ESPN opting out. Rob Manfred not necessarily hiding any contempt for the cable model in his statement. It was a memo to owners, and he was very clear about his feelings about cable, his feelings about ESPN and its coverage of baseball. If you've been reading SMW, you know what I'm talking about. But I will just go ahead and quickly give you some of the hits here. He said that MLB does not believe that pay TV, ESPN's primary distribution platform, is the future of video distribution or the best platform for our content. And of course, that's true, but an odd thing to say, right? It's not really the future of distribution or the best platform for anybody's content, from the NFL to the NBA to hockey. And you don't say that, especially when you have other deals with cable networks that you still have, like the entire WBD deal is for cable. Granted, you know, they do stream on Max, and the Fox deal includes games on FS1, including important playoff games. So that was kind of a bit of a notable statement in and of itself. He put out numbers for ESPN in terms of subscribers that were very low, 53.6 million homes, I think. That's not a coincidence, right? That's a number that would obviously exclude some of the streaming services. So he's, you know, going out there with the most unflattering portrayal he can find. And then the coverage complaint, which I think he's gotten a lot of traction with baseball fans over in terms of agreeing, complaining about the fact that ESPN does not really cover the sport very often. I will go into detail on why all of this is a bit disingenuous. But first, Armand, your thoughts on the tone Rob Manfred struck last week and the decision that has been made mutually or not?
I had issues with the rancor dripping in Manfred's statement, which was released by The Athletic. Evan Drellich, I believe, of The Athletic, obtained the statement Manfred released to the owners. I just don't get it. Manfred also said that he believed the arguments people were spewing out about the Apple and Roku deals were not inappropriate. They did not fit the narrative, I guess, for lack of a better term. But I just don't understand how he could draw that conclusion. Now, granted, I understand that Roku did not have playoff games, Apple did not have playoff games, but do you really mean to tell me that a $550 million ESPN deal and a $10 million Roku deal and an $85 million Apple deal, do you really mean to tell me that all three of those should exist in the same space? And that ESPN would not look around and say, wait a minute, why are we paying 55 times more than Roku? Why are we paying so much more than Apple? Like, was it really a surprise to you that ESPN would look around here and say, these folks are paying peanuts and yet we're buying the whole farm? I just don't understand Manfred's strategy here. So many things I feel Manfred did wrong in this. And the statement doesn't really make him look much better, except for the coverage part. I think most people agree who follow baseball ESPN did a terrible job in covering Major League Baseball, and it's been that way for a while. There's no baseball tonight. Meanwhile, NBA Today has a presence. NFL Live is one of the best daily studio shows out there, but you get nothing from ESPN in the way of a genuine, sincere baseball show for baseball fans. I'm with that, but is that something that needs to be said by Manfred? But on a larger scale, I just don't understand why you spread the wealth around here with Apple and Roku and then get surprised, and I'm using that word in quotation marks, when ESPN looks around and says, we don't know how we're supposed to be feeling about all the decisions you've made. Manfred seems to me to have dug himself in a couple of different holes here, and now he comes across sounding in some ways like a jilted ex-lover.
Well, first of all, I do agree that the ESPN coverage left a lot to be desired. And the point you made, you know, they also have an NHL studio show and they don't air it, you know, every day. They air it more regularly than, you know, Baseball Tonight, which is to say, you know, you get it a couple of times a week. You'll get it sometimes when they don't have a game, you know, whereas with Baseball Tonight, it's just a pregame show before the Sunday night game. So there's a legitimate complaint there, but it's entirely disingenuous. And I say that because let's all be completely honest, right? ESPN opted out over money. Had ESPN not opted out, there's no universe where MLB opts out because ESPN has bad coverage, right? And MLB could have opted out, you know, but if ESPN doesn't opt out over money, MLB isn't opting out because Baseball Tonight got canceled. So the entire idea that this is ESPN didn't treat us right. It's like I said, completely disingenuous. I don't buy it at all. And I think that Manfred comes off not as a jilted ex-lover, but as somebody who doesn't want to take any responsibility for the strategic missteps that have led MLB, which is still a very healthy property on national television, to have an insufficient national TV presence and to make certainly very insufficient money from some of these packages.
The word mutual is doing a lot of heavy lifting. It would seem from everything that we know now about this deal and about Manfred's decisions. I just don't get it. I mean, I know that Manfred is not regarded as the best commissioner of the major sports. I get that. But man, I just don't understand some of the strategies here. It's my belief, and I don't like thinking like this, and I don't want to be the guy to say it this way, but it is my belief that Major League Baseball needs ESPN more than ESPN needs Major League Baseball. And I do agree with you, John, that, yeah, this is a money situation, because correct me if I'm wrong, that $550 million deal was a decrease from the previous deal, which was $700 million. So there were signs here. Now, granted, you had some cutback in coverage there. There was no Monday Night Baseball, no Wednesday Night Baseball from ESPN. But there were signs here that we were headed in this direction. But even with that, the importance of ESPN to Major League Baseball cannot be overlooked here. This, you're talking about 35 years of consistent coverage. And you reported that, and I hadn't seen anyone else mention this, you reported that this deal also includes the radio aspect, the radio piece, which a lot of people forget about. So that's one more situation that Major League Baseball now has to deal with. Everybody's going to be focused on the TV piece, but from a radio standpoint, where does the World Series go? Where do these major games go? Where does the All-Star game go as well? If you're Rob Manfred, man, help baseball land somewhere solidly. I mean, can we not just sort of throw Major League Baseball in all these different pockets? Can we whittle things down and approach this next media opportunity, wherever it ends up being? Can we approach this thing with some common sense and some simplicity? I just think Manfred has made Major League Baseball's media rights and their multiple situations. I just think he's made it more difficult than it's needed to be. It's needless to me.
Well, let's start with the first mistake. That was not having this current meteorites deal all struck at the same time. The Fox portion of this deal was announced in 2018. The ESPN portion was announced after COVID. I think it might have been 2021, maybe 2020. These were all announced over the course of years, all separately. And so the ESPN one was the last one. That was the one where ESPN gave up Monday and Wednesday Night Baseball and got a lower rights fee as a result. If these deals were all being negotiated at the same time, maybe those rights go to Fox. Maybe Fox pays a little bit more, or WBD pays a little bit more, right? Instead, these rights are just kind of out for bid, and there's nothing wrong with reserving some rights to sell after the main deals are done. The NFL certainly has done that with a lot of the big streaming deals. You know, all the big streaming deals that the NFL has done have been with rights that were not already accounted for. NBA, for the WNBA, has two packages still up for bid that we think are going to go to CBS and ION. So there's nothing wrong with that. What you end up with is two packages that they sell for, you know, pennies on the dollar, $85 million to Apple, $10 million to Roku a year. And it totally resets the market, and it totally undermines the league's ability to get, you know, nine figures for any of their media rights. Because if I'm ESPN, it's foolish, you know, just madness to pay $550 million a year when Apple is paying $85 million for what really amounts to the bulk of your package, which is a weekly exclusive window. And in fact, Apple gets two weekly exclusive windows. So I think, now maybe I'm wrong here, if you add up, I mean, Apple is what, all season long, so 52 Friday night games. ESPN has the 26 Sunday night games, plus maybe five others, so like 31. Well, actually, let me see, opening day, I think it's about probably the same number of exclusive games or more for Apple. And yeah, ESPN gets, you know, the home run derby and the playoffs, and their games are more important. And as Manfred pointed out, ESPN gets a fully exclusive window with Sunday Night Baseball. But I mean, the financial disparity, given the inventory, is totally untenable. And MLB did that. MLB did that. You know, it didn't have to end up. And you know what else, too? And I've been wondering about this since the beginning. But long before MLB got to this point, but all the way back to when these deals with Apple and Roku were first announced. I don't think ESPN gives up Monday and Wednesday Night Baseball if they get exclusivity. So you could have probably kept the Monday and Wednesday night games and kept ESPN at $700 million a year by giving them the exclusivity that you just kind of tossed off with Apple and Roku. So the strategy makes no sense. It makes no sense to say, well, we're not going to put this exclusively on cable, but we will put it exclusively on Apple TV Plus and Roku. And yeah, I know Roku's free. Yeah, and Tubi is free too, and we saw how well Tubi did for the Super Bowl. But to me, you're not going to convince me that even a free service like Roku is as familiar and easy to access for most people, at least most sports fans, as ESPN.
You can't back yourself to the wall and then get mad when the wall messes up your t-shirt. And that's what Manfred has done here. I'm interested in your thoughts on this piece, John. In that statement that was released by The Athletic, Manfred said, "We don't think it's beneficial for us to accept a smaller deal to remain on a shrinking platform." And we assume he's talking about cable. Well, what does that mean for WBD? What does that mean for Fox Sports, FS1? You've got major games, LCS games, airing on cable. What are they to think about that kind of a statement? Is that some sign that come 2028, things could be much different for baseball in their media rights then?
Well, I'm glad you brought up WBD, because, you know, it occurs to me that these statements by Manfred are the league equivalent of David Zaslav saying we don't have to have the NBA, right? just some weirdly brash, unwise statement at the start of negotiations. Now, obviously, WBD is in no position to say, oh, yeah, well, we won't have MLB. They need MLB. They need NHL. They've got to retain what rights they have. But, you know, it was an unnecessarily broad statement of dissatisfaction with cable by a commissioner whose league is heavily invested in cable television through, you know, the main networks, the national networks, and through the RSNs that still exist. And he may be upset with the state of the industry, the state of the RSN industry, certainly, with ESPN coverage, but you're too embedded in cable right now to be saying these things. So it's not going to result in, you know, hey, if MLB goes to WBD and says, you know, jump, they're going to say how high, because they don't have any leverage right now. But it'll make the relationship maybe a little bit more hostile than it needs to be. And, you know, I look at NASCAR, which obviously MLB is way more popular than NASCAR, right? But I think NASCAR probably has a healthier relationship with its partners than MLB has with its partners. And I think NASCAR, which doesn't make that much less than MLB, like MLB is closer to NASCAR right now in national TV revenue than it is to the NBA. You know, I don't think that NASCAR looks at cable the same way. They look at cable and they say, oh, the money is still here. Okay, well, then we're not going to take any races away from USA or FS1. We're going to take the races away from Big Fox and from NBC when we bring in our new packages. It's not great for exposure, but it's, you know, the sensible business move, even though I'm a big proponent of sports on broadcast TV. It'd be one thing if MLB had something like what the NBA has, which is this golden opportunity to return to broadcast TV en masse. But unless they've got a deal with Comcast coming up that's going to put, you know, games on NBC or something, I really don't know that what MLB is doing is going to really benefit the fans. It's going to be a circumstance where MLB is going to have a tough time making up the money that they've lost from ESPN. And if they think that streaming right now is a better business than cable, I don't know that they're right. There's going to have to be a peacock circumstance where NBC paid big money to ensure exclusives for Peacock. And in order to make it happen, they were willing to put tons of games on their broadcast network. That's the only way I see it happening. And Comcast wasn't even willing to pay $30 million for a Peacock game of the week last year. So I don't know that that's going to happen for them.
And we know Paramount is in no position to even try and kick out the kind of money that we would assume Major League Baseball is looking for. So that doesn't seem like a viable option. I don't know, John. I don't know where baseball goes here. It seems to me, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but streaming seems to be the only legitimate option unless there's something out there we're not aware of. But to your point, how does it help the baseball fan? How does it help Major League Baseball keep up with the fans they have and any potential fans that they might want to grow the game? I just feel like they've backed themselves into a corner here, and it's senseless to me in many ways.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is completely senseless. And, you know, again, all the mistakes were made years ago. Like I said, not having the rights negotiated at the same time, you know, selling the rights at such a steep discount to streamers, and now kind of being as vocally, you know, I guess obnoxious is one word to put it, as they've been regarding ESPN and cable. I mean, you know, maybe it'll all work out. The one thing that I would say for MLB that's a good thing is it's a short-term circumstance, 26, 27, and 28, 3 years. So, you know, MLB can't afford to take a haircut, as I think John Arand reported this week, you know, that MLB is content to take less money in the short term and then sell the rights, you know, in a bigger deal, this 2028 deal they've been looking at. But, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the other thing, too, is baseball, even after a great World Series, even after a highly rated World Series, how strong a property is baseball? You know, because, again, you talk about the money that's being spent. they've devalued their rights. So nobody's going to want to go out and spend big money on something that Roku's getting for $10 million a year. So they've devalued their rights. And, you know, MLB is also not necessarily viewed typically as a sport for the future. It's one of the reasons why I've always kind of felt, at least, well, I won't say always, but in recent years, have felt as if maybe even the National Hockey League might be more attractive to an Amazon. You know, it's shorter. You have a clock, right? Even though baseball has done the pitch clock, you really don't know how long your game is going to go. So it's shorter, it's faster, and probably more importantly than anything, it's a lot more valuable national TV inventory because, you know, the NHL gives up a lot. I mean, exclusive windows all season long to ESPN Plus, not to mention the exclusives on linear TV, and then more rounds of playoffs, which, you know, nobody wants baseball to expand the playoffs further, but that is an advantage for the NHL and NBA. If I'm Amazon and 2028 rolls around and the NHL and baseball are both up for bid, I suspect Amazon might bid on both. But if they were to only choose one, would you choose the NHL or would you choose MLB? I don't know what decision I would make if I were that Bezos guy.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, we know Jimmy Pitaro, the president of ESPN, is a baseball fan. So I'm assuming here that MLB is not going to get the NHL treatment post-2004 when ESPN acted like hockey did not exist until they got the rights a couple of years ago, and now it's the greatest thing ever. But I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens here. How does ESPN handle Major League Baseball highlights? How do they handle the World Series coverage? How do they handle things going forward? And where does baseball go? I don't know what happens to some of ESPN's baseball talent. People like John Shambi, who is a baseball broadcaster for the Chicago Cubs, but he also does basketball for ESPN. Could he be someone to end up being a lead broadcaster for a television, whatever television network is Major League Baseball finds itself with next? Just a lot of questions, but I think the top question is where are they going to be? Where are the fans going to be able to find these games going forward? Because there's not a clean solution to this point, and that's a shame.
Yeah, and, you know, it's worth noting, baseball has always had a difficult time with national TV. Going back to the days of the CBS deal, was a bad deal.
Dreadful.
It lasted 4 years. Then the baseball network was a bad, bad arrangement that was totally undermined by the strike and ended ugly. But, you know, Dick Ebersol said in 1995, when they announced that the baseball network was going to end, we're never going to be involved with baseball for the rest of this decade, right? For the rest of this century, actually, he said. 5 years left in the century in 1995, so it's not, you know, that grandiose. But they were back the very next year. 1999, MLB terminates ESPN's contract, goes to court because ESPN is putting Sunday Night Football on instead of Sunday Night Baseball in September when the two sports overlap. And they agreed to a deal, in their settlement. So baseball goes to the brink. It has tempestuous relationships with its national partners. Maybe this is one where you'll end up saying, oh, okay, ESPN stayed. Because ESPN, per John Orand of Puck, ESPN still wants to deal. I mean, ESPN is being pragmatic here, and MLB is being emotional. ESPN still wants to deal. I would say if I can get a deal with ESPN, you know, ESPN doesn't do a good job covering the NBA either. But that didn't, you know, and hey, as a fan, purely as a fan, I would have been fine if Adam Silver had said, we're not going to be on ESPN anymore. Would the NBA be making the kind of money that it's going to make next year from ESPN from somebody else? Probably not. It's a smart financial solution is to say, okay, the coverage isn't great, but whatever. We are a business. That is a decision that Manfred would have made if he'd been able to. Instead, he's dressing this up in the populist, we're doing this because ESPN's bad. I think if there's an opportunity to get back with ESPN, get a deal that keeps you with some presence on the network, and it's a contract. If you want Baseball Tonight back on, put it in the contract. The NBA Today and The Jump before it exist as part of the NBA's contract with ESPN. You know, Manfred, if you're so upset to say as part of this deal, ESPN must hear Baseball Tonight. If ESPN is going to say, well, we want to take less money as part of the deal, say, okay, fine. You can take a little money off of the deal, but we want Baseball Tonight back on every single night, even if it's on ESPN too. But we've got to have a Baseball Tonight every night. Like, negotiate, right? You know, I mean, I don't understand this weird thing that they've done. But, we have spent nearly a half hour on this, so we won't continue further. But to me, I don't see the necessity for where MLB and ESPN are right now. And usually pragmatism wins out over bold, angry talk. All right, let's shift gears to another big story from late last week. The NHL Four Nations Face-Off Final, the Canada-United States game, Canada winning in overtime. And it averaged 9.3 million viewers on ESPN, an audience far in excess of anything I think any reasonable person would have ever thought was possible for that event. And officially the top Nielsen audience ever for an NHL game. Of course, anytime we're talking about Nielsen ratings, you have to talk about a million different caveats. Let's start with out-of-home viewing. There was no out-of-home viewing being tracked in the final Nielsen estimates back in 2019. When Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final had 8.7 million viewers, with out-of-home viewing, and certainly with the current level of out-of-home viewing, that 2019 game is probably at 10 million at least. You could probably say the same about any number of games in the 2010s. The Game 6s, the Blackhawks would win and get over 8 million for maybe even Game 7 in 09, Detroit and Pittsburgh was just shy of 8 million. Game 7, 2011, Bruins, Canucks. All, long story short, it's definitely not the most watched NHL-affiliated game on record. There's any number of games from the recent past, and then if you go way back to the 1970s, a handful from back then as well that had more, but officially the largest NHL audience ever measured by Nielsen. And given what this is a totally new event, nothing at all that anyone was anticipating. Yes, it taps into this existing rivalry, the USA and Canada. And of course, the political circumstances, a massive, massive factor. But this is just something the NHL made up one day. And immediately people took to it in ways that I don't think anyone would have ever thought. Armand, how do you explain this incredible bounty that the NHL stumbled into?
That's a good way to put it, stumbled into it, because like you said, this was not some 5-year, 10-year plan to bring these nations together and do this. For lack of a better term, this was kind of thrown together and it came together beautifully. I couldn't help but think, what if it was a Finland-Sweden final? Would we even be talking about this? The only thing I can think of is lightning in a bottle. I mean, everything came together so perfectly. I mean, I have to go there. If Kamala Harris is president of the United States, does this game get 9.25 million viewers? I mean, and that's not even me trying to be political. It's just, my point is everything had to come together so perfectly. They were booing the anthem. The Canadian singer changed some of the words to the Canadian anthem. Wow. I mean, just compelling stuff fueled by all the geopolitical stuff that is happening right now between the United States and Canada, the tariffs and the 51st state and so on and so forth. But I mean, lightning in a bottle. I will say this. I have to say this. I feel like I have to. Stop comparing this to the NBA. Please stop. Stop comparing this to the All-Star game. They're not the same. Just stop comparing. And I don't see this, John, while I am excited about this number. And as a television event, it was everything you could ask for. The commentary was great. I thought Sean McDonough and Ray Ferraro were great. There was just amazing drama. Boston was hot, one of the hottest tickets you'll find for a sporting event in recent years. Everything came together so perfectly. But I don't see this, and I hope I'm wrong, I don't see this as the beginning of some massive boost in interest for NHL. I'd love to be wrong on that, but I do think people need to sort of slow down with the comparisons. Please stop, not even slow down, just stop with the NBA comparisons. And I do think we just need to sort of take in the moment of just how unique and how special an event this was without trying to make it the beginning of some massive boost in interest for NHL. So, but those were my thoughts. Everything had to come together perfectly, and it did.
You know, you make great points. You know how it is with the NBA. People are always looking for some kind of reason to trash the league. And the NHL is often a very convenient, because they're on at the same time. It's very convenient to use the NHL. I mean, honestly, I think that kind of motivates like at least 50% of Charles Barkley's NHL love. I think it's just him trying to dig at the NBA. Obviously, you can't compare this to an All-Star game. If you do, it was the most watched All-Star event in sports since the 2017 MLB All-Star game. But realistically, we know that it was not an All-Star event. The real comparison is to international sports. But again, there's not a lot of great comparisons because it's not really fair to compare this to the Olympics with all the branding and power and, you know, the majesty of the NBC John Williams theme music, right? But if we were to compare it to the Olympics, we know that 20 million were watching all those maligned basketball players who don't try hard and don't have any pride, according to PK Subban. 20 million people were watching that back in August as the USA beat France in the gold medal game. So if you don't compare it to the Olympics, what is the comparison? What, to the World Baseball Classic? And it is true. The World Baseball Classic final, USA-Japan, tremendous number back in 2023. 5 million, though, on FS1. We'll be completely real here. We all know FS1 can't compare to ESPN on its best day. So that is a big factor. But, you know, I mean, again, I mean, it doesn't fully account the network difference for the golfing audience. So we can say, okay, USA-Canada over USA-Japan, despite Ohtani and Trout and that incredible drama. Well, that's where the politics comes in. That's where the out-of-home viewing comes in. That's where the rivalry comes in, where there just is not a rivalry, even though you have Ohtani. No one has a problem with Ohtani. There's no beef. There's no real intensity. Was there a single moment in the World Baseball Classic where the benches cleared? You know, it was a nice event. It was a lovely event. But, you know, that animosity, there was genuine animosity in the Four Nations face-off. And you said, well, what if it had been Finland versus Sweden? Then it still would have gotten a tremendous number for hockey. Probably 2-3 million for Finland versus Sweden. That'd be an amazing number. So I think, you know, honestly, there was really no bad outcome there. It was a tremendous outcome for the NHL. I do think that, as I would say, I would agree with you. It needs to be the case that when something good happens for the NHL, people don't immediately start looking at the NBA. Like, it is actually okay to evaluate the NHL's success just on its own merits. And I think the NHL had a tremendous success.
Yeah, like, just let me park on that real quick. Let's let the NHL have its moment. I mean, let the NHL just luxuriate in this. This is a massive number. And I just, let them have it. Let them have this number. This is wonderful stuff, and it ought to be celebrated. But let's just slow down on trying to make this something bigger than what it is. This was an incredible television event with so many things coming together at just the right time, all the ingredients were there to cook up this masterpiece of an event. We ought to just celebrate that and see what happens in the future. We'll check the data, we'll examine the numbers, but please don't make this some sort of beatdown of the NBA. And please don't try and suggest that this means the NHL is now the second most popular sport in this country. Neither one of those things should apply here. Let's just slow down. Let's enjoy the number and give Gary Bettman and the NHL credit for putting this together the way they did and for it being on ESPN and ABC, which was also a major deal here. Because I would even argue, John, if this is on TNT, like, does it get that number, right? I mean, and TNT is a partner, right? They air the Stanley Cup final every other year. I don't know if it gets that number if it's on TNT. So everything coming together. That's my point. Everything coming together to get to this number. It's a marvelous accomplishment, and the NHL ought to be pretty proud.
Yeah, I think you certainly won't see any viewership like this for the Stanley Cup final on TNT this year. I mean, maybe, you know, if, well, no, because, I mean, I was trying to think about what the matchup would be. And
John, Edmonton, Florida will get you $9 million.
Well, Edmonton, Florida, hey, if the out-of-home viewing had been what it is this year or last year, maybe it would have been close that game seven. But my point being, on TNT, it's going to be tough sledding based on the matchup. I mean, you never know. They might get a good matchup this year. But I think, you know, it did well. But I will also just note, you know, I know P.K. Subban took some serious heat from some of his Canadian colleagues for some of his comportment. You know, P.K.'s really revitalized the ESPN NHL studio. Part of it is that they now actually, you know, they have a studio as opposed to sitting right up against the wall like they were the first year. P.K. definitely has revitalized that studio. But my goodness gracious, can someone kind of get him to maybe try to be a little bit less of a provocateur? I mean, it really seems like he is eager to be someone who irritates people. And it's a lot like Draymond Green. He's a lot like Draymond in that way, where it's just like he seems to just want to, he says things that are needlessly antagonistic, like the Lizzo joke or whatever. Like, these are things that, look, I'm not going to say you're the most offensive person in the world or anything, but if you don't need to antagonize people, don't. I know that people who are antagonistic have had tremendous success, whether you're talking about the president, or you're talking about Stephen A. Smith, or you're talking about Skip Bayless, or you're going all the way back to Morton Downey Jr. There's been this reward over the course of decades for antagonistic people who make folks angry. But you know something? You don't actually have to be that way to be successful. And the skills that PK has are definitely overshadowed by some of his more reckless and unnecessary provocations.
Well, it feeds right into what ESPN loves to do. So many of their really good analysts, they do this to them. They get up, they put them on First Take. Those guys start getting overexposed, and they put them in these environments. It's like a contagious, infectious disease, right? I've seen it with Orlovsky. I'm like, come on, Dan, you're better than this, dude. I mean, don't fall for it. Come to the light, Dan. Come to the light, PK. But that's what they do, man. They start moving you around the car wash. They start moving you through, and you end up finding yourself being sort of this hot take artist. So compare it to TNT, where those guys just have a bunch of fun. I guess ESPN is like, well, if we're not going to have fun, we're just going to debate, because apparently that's what we do best. So whatever.
Yep. Yeah, indeed. All right. Let's move on to some other sports media topics from the past week. And why don't we start with last night? Again, we're taping Wednesday. Luka Doncic playing his former team for the first time in Dallas. And that game on TNT had 2.5 million viewers, a respectable number. I mean, nothing eye-popping, obviously, but the most watched NBA game on cable since opening night. And if you take out opening week events, it was the most watched since LeBron set the all-time scoring record 2 years ago. So more than healthy. Again, out-of-home viewing a factor. That's a factor in every single data point that's coming out over the past few weeks. But pretty healthy numbers there. And if you're the NBA, you got to feel pretty good about, you know, tentatively, very cautiously optimistic about how the Lakers and Warriors look right now. Lakers 15-4 over their past 19 games, and that includes before the Luka Doncic trade. And the Warriors have not lost but one game since trading for Jimmy Butler. Should the NBA still be dependent on the Lakers and Warriors? Of course not. But hey, if you've got them, if you still got LeBron and you still got Steph Curry, you want them to be competitive. You certainly don't want them to be in the circumstance that Kevin Durant is in right now. So you will gladly take it if you're the NBA.
So what you're telling me, John, is I should go ahead and book my tickets for the Golden State LA West Finals, right? That's what you're telling me, right?
Well, no, I think you should book your tickets for the Paycom Center in Oklahoma City. But, you know, just getting the Lakers and Warriors into the second round is all you need if you're the NBA.
Yeah.
If you could somehow set it up like 2023, where they are on the same side of the bracket and the real contender is off in the other side, and you can maybe even get a Lakers-Warriors second round series. I mean, that would be ideal. The Lakers, I think, have an outside shot at getting to the NBA Finals if they're healthy. I don't, you know, I'm not predicting they're going to get there, but I could see it. Obviously, they've been playing great since, I mean, they were playing great when they had Anthony Davis there. And honestly, I'm still kind of debating if they had Davis and Christie in the lineup instead of Luka. I wonder, would they really be a title contender, because they were playing excellent basketball for a while. But, you know, to me, when it comes down to it, you don't need them to get to the finals. You just need them to at least win one series, right? And if they both lose in the second round, you at least got them to the second round. You just need to get them into important playoff games. Last year, Steph played no playoff games. Durant won no playoff games. LeBron won one playoff game. If you can improve over that, that might be enough just to get the playoff viewership up by itself.
John, take me back a couple of years. I know I'm asking this off the cuff. That series, that LA Golden State series a couple of years ago, it averaged about close to 8 million. Is that right?
Yeah.
Man, that would be pretty cool for the NBA if that happened again this year. But who knows if it will or not. But I can say this. The Lakers are fun. And that's great. It's been a while since the Lakers have been fun. And when they win a championship with LeBron, it's in the bubble and very few people remember it compared to other seasons and other championships. So I love this. As an NBA fan, but maybe not a hardcore fan, the Lakers being not just good, but interesting, is just great. I recall weeks ago when you and I started on this journey together, I remember saying the Lakers are not good. Because at the time, they weren't really good. They were okay, but they weren't really good. Luka's presence makes them good and interesting and fun. And I was thinking about this. When the season began, everybody was talking about Bronny, and there was so many eyeballs were coming to the product. Not a ton of eyeballs, but there was some interest there, you know, to see how Bronny and LeBron and watch history and all of that stuff. But it wasn't fun. It was interesting. It was cute. It was nice. Oh, here's Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. But Bronny is not anywhere close to the caliber of player that Luka Doncic is. So the Lakers being good, the Lakers being fun, I would love to see them go pretty deep into the playoffs. Don't know if it'll happen. Oklahoma City is a juggernaut right now. But man, it's just nice to see the Lakers on a bit of a roll here. And Golden State, Jimmy Butler's presence has obviously made a difference. As much as the NBA may not like it, these are your faces, right? It's still LeBron's league. It's still Steph's league. It's still KD's league, even though he's not winning. And so for the Lakers and the Warriors to be good and relevant and make deep playoff runs is definitely a plus for the NBA still, even though, you know, LeBron's 40 years old and Steph is pushing 40.
Yeah. No, you know, they can only be stars still if they're playing at a high level, which certainly both of them are right now, and hopefully they can stay healthy. While we're on the subject of the NBA, Richard Jefferson got the top NBA gig on ESPN. He will be joining, I nearly said Michelle Beadle for some reason. I don't know why. He'll be joining Mike Breen and Doris Burke on the lead NBA team for ESPN starting, well, he's been doing it all season long, but he'll be continuing into the finals. I think they should have made that move last year. I think Jefferson's a better analyst than Reddick was. He's better for TV. I mean, obviously, I know people don't love Richard's style. They don't love his humor. But I've always thought he was great for TV and does a great job of, you know, with his chemistry, with, you know, Doris, with Sarah Kustak. To me, I think it's the right move to make.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty obvious, right, that we were going to end up here. Strange that it took ESPN so long. I mean, just go across the street, you know, like he's right there. Just go grab him. We don't have to go around the block and, you know, to the next town. Just get Richard Jefferson. He's right there. He did your Christmas game. He's done some of the big games, primetime games with Breen and Doris Burke. Just give him the gig. I will say this, though. I just have a hunch, and I'm not reporting here, but I just have a hunch that Richard Jefferson ends up, I know it's been reported in The Athletic by Andrew Marchand that Jefferson is being targeted by Amazon for its NBA coverage. I just got a feeling that maybe Jefferson might trickle on over to Amazon and be a part of that team with Iron Eagle and company. I think, according to Marchand's report, I think they're looking at Jefferson for that lead crew with Iron Eagle, which would just be a continuation of what they've been doing with Yes for years now. But it's a temporary fix. ESPN's booth it's going to be in flux apparently for a while, post Van Gundy, Mark Jackson departures, firings, layoffs, whatever ESPN's calling them. But it makes the most sense. Jefferson, he's colorful. He's animated. He's interesting. He's a character. But there was really no other obvious choice other than Richard Jefferson. He was right there and, you know, smart of ESPN to make this decision. It's not the greatest booth in the world. It's not really close to what they had with Van Gundy and Jackson, but I think everybody knows that. And so you can't really focus on the past. You can't dwell on it. You've got to make a decision. And Jefferson was the obvious choice.
Yeah, I agree. It's not the best booth. I do agree with you that I think Jefferson will probably go to Amazon if he's got the opportunity. Great chemistry with Iron Eagle. I imagine he would be paid good money. He might have to focus on personal liberties personal liberties and free markets. He might have to focus on that to get that gig. But look, I think he'd be a good fit there. And to me, that would be the decision I would make because ESPN lays people off with regularity. And I would not. Yeah, calling the finals is great, but I think you might have better job security at Amazon.
Real quick, John, can we just give Doris Burke the job as a solo analyst? I mean, when are we going to stop the revolving door here? Just give it to Doris.
Yeah. I don't think they want to go with just a solo analyst. They've only done it twice or three times since they've had the NBA on the finals. Doc Rivers in 04, Hubie Brown in 05, and Van Gundy when Mark left. But we'll see what they want to do. Really quickly before we go, Laura Rutledge signing a contract extension with ESPN. They don't really have a ton of stuff for her to do that she's not already doing. And she's made it quite clear through the quality of her work that she's ready to go to another level. They don't have another level to get her to. So I don't really know what that's going to result in. Maybe it's a stopgap, and it's just kind of waiting to see how the musical chairs work out with some of these other NFL gigs. Because if we come back around in like 5 or 6 years, and she's still doing NFL Live and SEC Nation and a few sideline hits, I don't know. I feel like that will have been a bit of a wasting of some pretty rising talent.
Yeah, I worked with Laura for a little bit at SEC Network. She was great then, too. Everyone speaks so well of her, so highly of her. But I agree with you. The Greenberg decision was baffling to me at the time. She was right there. It just seemed to be so obvious. But personally, I do wonder, she's still relatively young, but she has a young family. So I wonder at what point does Laura start to say, you know what, I'm working a little too much. SEC Nation and NFL Live, and they sometimes put her on sideline for college football and NFL games. So she works a lot, and ESPN loves people who work a lot. But I do think at some point Laura needs to become the face a studio face, not just a reporter, not just a host. Laura is good enough to be the studio face of NFL coverage for a network. And so hopefully she'll get that opportunity because she's certainly deserving of it.
You know, interesting point you make, you know, SEC Nation would be very easy to drop. I mean, we have no idea how many people are watching this show. Also the case that, you know, today, I mean, you know, kind of a somber day if you are in my particular age group, which you are in as well, in terms of, you know, I guess, reminders of mortality, right? Anyone who grew up on Harriet the Spy might know what I'm talking about. So maybe, you know, that might be a circumstance where you say, hey, you know what? Let me focus on doing the best that I can do beyond just work, because you just never know, right? So, I mean, that could be definitely work smarter, not harder, right?
I agree.
All right. One more thing before we head out. Sports on Max. This is something that I found very interesting today. They are not going to move forward with the extra fee for live Sports on Max, but they are going to move it to a higher tier, which means that starting at the end of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, if you want to watch live sports with Max, you're going to have to pay $17 a month. And yeah, okay. We knew going in that if they put in that add-on, the original plan was $10 on top of a Max subscription, it would have been $20, right? That's a lot. But this is still a lot too. And I don't know what the appetite is for watching events on TNT and TBS. $17 a month, I mean, that blows ESPN Plus out of the water. You know, and granted, we're talking linear level sporting events, not, you know, Illinois State versus Lindenwood. Okay. But I mean, to me, it's a little rich. It's a little rich what Max is trying to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm thinking about the viewer here, and are you really getting bang for your buck? I mean, that's a lot of money, and it's not like you're getting NFL games. You know, like this is not Amazon Prime Thursday Night Football here. That's a lot. And if I'm a viewer, just being honest with you, I don't have Max. I don't see the value in it. And I certainly don't see the value in it with this price point. So, you know, whatever they get from it, you know, good for them. But as a consumer, as a viewer, it doesn't work for me, brother. So that's just my standpoint. That's my viewpoint on it. You know, I just.
Well, no, I mean, if you want to see ad breaks in TCM movies, then, you know, Max is the one for you. But yeah, that'll wrap things up for us this week. One more quick thing. Noah Eagle officially being named to the NBA on NBC, which anyone could have expected. Also, I would be remiss if I did not mention the passing of Al Troutwig, the former MSU Network host and Olympic gymnastics voice. Passed away at 68 this week, kind of an under-the-radar voice during his career, but was part of 17 Olympics broadcasts, most recently in 2018. So just wanted to mention that before we call it a day. And with that in mind, thanks again for listening to the SMW podcast, and we'll be back with more stuff down the line.